I apologize for the screw up there. I wander around. My background is not a physician of public health. I'm an emergency room doctor who about 13 years ago came to public health after the anthrax events and incident. My intention was to stay at the state health department for 2 years and then become a ED chairman, and 13 years later here I am. I have a lot to present because I don't know, or I did not have a feel for what the background was of my audience. How many people here in your routine daily activity do disaster emergency preparedness activities? Okay, not very many. So what I tried to do is structure the presentation to give you a little bit of background of what we have to do within the Office of Preparedness and Response, and how they relate to public health, and how we are undertaking, as Lori had said, Dr. Gross had mentioned, taking qualitative data for assessment of our emergency preparedness program and turning it into a quantitative thing. So I have no relationships to discuss other than I have a wife and three daughters, so I'm in trouble all the time. Here's the state of public health, and I know you'll appreciate this. This is a report from WHO between 2010 and 2011, and what it shows is that there's been a significant decrease in the number of programs and the amount of funding for public health. And most significantly, greatest drop in maternal and child health services, other personal health services, emergency preparedness, 20% drop, but there was an effort to maintain epidemiology and surveillance activities within the state health department, or within local health departments. So this is no surprise to anybody here, right? I mean, we're losing people. So if you look at, let's see, which slide is this? Okay, go ahead, switch next. Loss of staff. So right here, since 2008 to 2011, a loss of 34,000 public health people, right? So a big stress on us. And the purpose of using the SWOT analysis here is, how do I go ahead and allocate limited funds, limited effort, and limited staff to have a maximum impact, in my case, on disaster and emergency preparedness? So in our office, for the past 18, 19 months, we've been operational for Ebola virus disease in Maryland, okay? Before that, pandemic influenza, we're looking at MERS, and all those activities, in addition to what we normally do in terms of grants management and everything else. So, if you look what's happening from an emergency preparedness perspective, the cooperative agreement funding has dropped 44% since its peak in initiation. So, what I'm going to present to you is the Red Queen Theorem of public health. And the Red Queen Theorem is an actual theorem. And so what it says, there's Alice, the Red Queen. Well, in our country, said Alice, still panicking a little. You generally get to somewhere else if you run very fast for a long time, as we've been doing, right? And what's the Red Queen though? A slow sort of country, said the Queen. Now, here you see it takes all the running you do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you must run twice as fast. So I think this is a nice description of what we're faced with in terms of public health right now. So the Office of Preparedness and Response, what do we do? Develop disaster and emergency preparedness capabilities. Those are our objectives, to maintain the community, develop resiliency within the community during disaster response, and it's either preparedness planning, mitigation, response, and recovery. So within the public health and medical community, we're doing that, and we look at stakeholders and partners in support of program goals and objectives. So very similar to, we want a healthy community, we want to cut down childhood obesity and everything. Our perspective is a little bit different, but it's similar to what we have to do. I know that's just the timer for the thing, so. Sorry. Go ahead. So, I put this up here because you're all public health people, but from the disaster and emergency preparedness perspective, we are public health, but we just do things a little bit different, right? We We do enhanced surveillance for emerging infectious diseases, anthrax cases, smallpox, Francisella tularensis, right? MERS, SARS, Ebola virus disease. We do analysis of the situation, so what's our situational awareness from a public health emergency perspective. We do communication. Hey, if there's anthrax, this is what you need to do, right? We do threat, risk, vulnerability assessments of the healthcare system to judge disaster and emergency preparedness. We do disease prevention. How many people here are familiar with the Strategic National Stockpile or the Cities Ready Initiative? Not very many. So, if through our enhanced surveillance techniques, syndromic surveillance techniques, we identify the presence and confirmed presence or suspected presence of anthrax within Maryland, we're obligated to dispense post-exposure trophies to 5.4 million people within 48 hours. So that is some of the things from emergency and disaster perspective that we're faced with. And so how do we evaluate our capabilities to achieve those missions and objectives that are I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but this is, you have a program, you have a system state, you pursue what's the perceived state, you identify gaps, and you just, you adjust and fill gaps. You do plan improvements, corrective action. Now, these are terminology from disaster preparedness exercise, planning, and so forth. So what if our, I'm going to give you an idea of some of our program objectives and goals. Incident management, coordination of emergency operations across state, federal, local agencies, which can be rather complicated because of personal agendas. Authority figures want to maintain their power. Resource management, medical material management and distribution, such as the national, the strategic national stockpile, get post-exposure doxy and CIPRO distributed and dispensed to the population. Planning efforts and information management, information sharing, intelligence gathering about a situation, much like traditional EPIs. Let me do an outbreak investigation. And I'll tell you, the highlight of my week is Friday mornings at work, because I get to go across the street with traditional EPIs and see how they do epidemiological investigation. Now, it's similar to what I do clinically if I'm evaluating the patient. Let me take all the pieces of the puzzle, find out what data I know, what data I don't know, what data I don't know that I don't know, to quote former Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, but I love sitting there listening to the EPIs because they're like detectives, right? And I learned an awful lot again because I'm not traditional public health. So how do we contain or obtain our data? We contain our data, it's basically a qualitative data. We conduct exercises to test our ability to dispense, to distribute and dispense those post-exposure in a box. So we conduct functional and operational assessments or drills. Limited operation drills are basically limited operational and functional testing. Exercises can be either tabletop exercises, which are facilitated discussions. What would you do in this situation when individuals are faced with a scenario? We have travelers coming from West Africa. They're coming through ports of entry, Dulles Airport outside Washington, or up in New York City, and the traveler's final destination is Maryland. What are you going to do? What do we need? How are we going to coordinate information? We also have full-scale functional exercises. So 3 years ago, we did a full-scale functional exercise, and people actually do what they're supposed to do to receive the Strategic National Stockpile from the Centers for Disease Control and distribute it from our warehouse. So those of you that are not aware, as an Office of Preparedness and Response, we do warehouse management. We have like a 20,000 square foot warehouse with what? Medical supplies and equipment, antiviral medications, etc. So again, a little bit different in some ways from traditional public health. So we take information from here. So what's the best data sources for us? Go ahead, next. Stakeholder, partner, interested party input through functional evaluation, discussions, and surveys. We have to have the correct individuals commenting on our program to get good feedback. So this is in response to 6 tabletop exercises we conducted across the state of Maryland in the fall, including a tabletop for the governor and his cabinet. And we see, okay, is there input significant? Am I getting the correct input from the correct individuals to comment about the quality of the program? You can see here, close to, it's actually 84%. 84% of the participants were from the public health and medical community. So I want these people to tell me, can you respond to Ebola virus disease emerging in the state of Maryland? And who are they? What are their respective organizations? Right? And what were their roles? So the majority of them were emergency planners and health officers. Great. The people who need to be commenting about the program and who should know the most about the respective program to respond to an emerging infectious disease. So, next slide. So, now we're going to start getting into the data, or how we hope into the data. And there's 3 ways. So, we use the SWOT analysis. Does everybody in here know what a SWOT analysis is? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's a business paradigm to help the business assess. If I want to introduce a new product, I want to expand the company. It's a logical means, efficient methodological means to do an assessment of where I stand in the community. So in 2013, in response to an exercise for the Strategic National Stockpile, full functional, we pioneered in our office the application of SWOT analysis to write a narrative review of our program. Next. So that's just it. I'm not going to go like to the next skill. So how do we use SWOT analysis within our office? Hey, we can use it to identify how do we make the strength better, how do we stop or improve or avoid or build upon a weakness, exploit an opportunity, or defend against a threat. So the way we either match an opportunity with a strength and convert an opportunity to a strength, or minimize or avoid a weakness or a threat. In this case, a threat is something major. If I didn't have trucks to distribute the medication, the whole program fails, right? So that's a weakness and a threat fall along the same line, except that a threat is something major that's catastrophic and it's going to impact how your ability to go ahead. Now, I know this is rather complicated, and I'm going to bring you from our, we do a hot wash after an exercise, which means we're done doing right now. We sit down and I say, how did I do today? And you guys tell me what I did good, tell me what I did bad, tell me how I can do better. It's called a hot wash after an exercise. But we also send out a post-exercise participant survey asking for comments, feedback, are the right people participating in the exercise? Did they learn anything? Was it valuable? Because if it's poorly designed and it's not valuable, it's a waste of a lot of money to do it. So we take the data, the comments, the findings, divide them up, and then exercise those. That's our Department Operations Center. So we wanted to assess the Department Operations Center. We take the comments and we divide or assign them or categorize them to a SWOT category. Oh, this is an opportunity to develop a system to see truck shipments in real time in the Department Operations Center. I need to know where that truck is and when it's going to get to the hospital, because the hospital is saying, hey, we've got a lot of people here coming, and we need to give them our antibiotics. So we go ahead and categorize the comments according to maybe the exercise note, a SWOT category, and then this is just additional granularity to these, but if this is countermeasure operations, this is incident incident management. And now, if we take these comments, we group them by the location or for participation in the exercise, group them like here for opportunities, and now we can summarize and make a narrative about incident management at the Department Operations Center and the opportunities that an individual said about improving the program. That's only 5 minutes? Jeez. Okay, we'll go through next. So here's the narrative you can get, right? And I underlined some key things here. So now I can do a narrative about incident management at our Department Operations Center for operational analysis. Here's the script. And if you ask me, oh, where did you get this comment? Rather than somebody just writing a summary here and not being able to justify it, I can do that. Okay, next. There's more weaknesses, next. Opportunities, next, next. Okay, so how can we make this better, right? I'm an ER doc, and those of you that don't know, here's some information for you. About 90% of ER docs have ADD, right? That's why they're in ED. Oh, look, somebody shot, great. Oh, this is, oh, look at the little kid. Oh, they're throwing up. Oh, look at this, right? You go around every 5 to 10 minutes, it's something new, and it's really exciting and fun. But anyways, how can we make this better? And so, you know, my mind wanders, my wife tells people that you tell me you think different, you're weird sometimes. But anyway, so we looked at how can we take this information that we wrote in narrative and now take qualitative aspects, as Lori mentioned and Dr. Girls mentioned, and in a justifiable, which, you know, the Secretary of Health or the health officer will say, why do you want to spend $1 million doing this? Right? They're going to say, because there's, well, now let me justify it. So what we did is we took all the comments, the total squad comments in one exercise, the Ebola exercises, related to incident management. So what percentage of all the comments and the discussion points were related to incident management, resource management, planning, information management, and exercise and training during the tabletop exercise to discuss Ebola virus disease in Maryland. And this is the percentages. So to me, the inference is, and I don't know statistics because it's been 40 years since I had statistics for those entries here, what's the standard deviation? I can't tell you. But to me, this tells me that as it relates specifically to responding to Ebola virus disease, that for the participants, the emergency planners from hospitals and health departments and health officers, these were their major concerns. So is this where I want to spend time enhancing my response or addressing issues related to responding to Ebola virus disease? So what I did, the obsessive compulsive internist side of me, because I didn't tell you I was trained as an internist, I now looked at Maryland as a whole and sub-state regions. And I looked at the frequency that the specific objectives, incident management, information management, were cited as strengths by jurisdiction. So that now, across the sub-regional jurisdictions, and within Maryland, I could say, hey, everybody thinks that incident management is a really strong strength that we have, right? And now you can see how they vary. So I want to spend time working on incident management and coordination of response, whereas, next, there's weaknesses. Planning, region 5, right? Go ahead, we'll go through, because I'll go through. There's opportunities by jurisdiction. Now, I'm getting the finger with this, but I'll try to go through. But if you allow me, I can try to finish up in a couple more minutes if that's agreeable to the group. I see a couple of them. Okay. So now what I did, here's for Maryland. I combined the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And if you can see, there appears to be a little bit of an inverse relationship. Oh, Incident management is highly related, highly graded as strength. It's a moderate to low weakness. There's good opportunity, but it's a low threat to operations in terms of responding to Ebola virus disease. Whereas if you look at resource management as it pertains to Ebola virus disease, because there are specific issues related to resource management. Am I going to get enough PPE? What type of PPE? And waste management, which may be different than TB, PPE used for TB. So if you look under this specific scenario for Ebola, resource management was not considered a strength. It was the top ranked tie for top ranked weakness. Little opportunity for it, but it was a major threat. Because if I have to take care of a patient under investigation, what? Given the transmissibility and the morbidity and mortality associated with EBD, I want the appropriate PPE, and it's rather a detailed PPE. We can talk about that after this. Anyway, so go back. So now I can use this as a means to try to assess where I want to spend money. Right? Because, oh, look at it. But different people would have different ways to interpret it. So I took it the next step further. Right? So is there a better way to determine it? And I said, well, let's say if we can do an objective differential. Determine the balance between competencies and deficiencies or gaps for each program or objective. What's the degree of competency or deficiency or gap for incident management, for example. So I look at competencies or value of a program or objective as a combination of strengths and opportunities versus deficiencies or ineffectiveness as reflected by weaknesses or threats in the program. Now, so I made a mathematical formula, right? And Dr. Rabowski is my daughter's teacher, right? Okay, I just want to clarify that. What I did is I took the number of times a capability or an objective was listed as a strength, weakness, opportunities, or threat, multiply it by a weighted factor, and then divided it by the total number of SWOT observations to get an indication as a capability competency or capability deficiency. And these are the values I arbitrarily selected. A strength and weakness I gave as a positive 3 and minus 3 respectively. I gave an opportunity of value 1 because it's intangible, it's there, I could use it if I built one, and I did not want to give it a 0. And then a threat, again, based on what I defined as earlier, I gave it a minus 1. Okay. So now, using the same formula, positive values reflect objective effectiveness or program competency, whereas a negative value reflects an objective failure, a deficiency, or a gap in the capability to perform that activity in response to a disaster or an emergency. So if I summed it up, now if you look across the sub-state jurisdictions and in Maryland, the major thing, negative, the biggest gap is resource management. It's common across there. Whereas now the greatest competencies for Maryland as a state overall and two of the four subject regions is incident management. So now you can see how there's a different pattern, and I can compare the capabilities or the ability to perform a given capability or obtain an objective in response to Ebola virus disease emergence within the state of Maryland. Now I can address regional specific allocation of funding, time, and effort to address these issues. So in summary, we use the SWOT analysis to provide three mechanisms of assessment for public health program goals and objectives. One is the qualitative aspects to develop a program narrative. Give me a summary of the program, an organized summary, logical summary of the program. Determination of the relative importance and value of program objectives by looking at the frequency with which each objective was noted as a strength, opportunity, weakness or threat. And then lastly, the quantitative determination of program competencies and gaps, which now would allow me to address and direct limited funding to those areas that need it the most across the state jurisdiction regions. And then SWOT analysis prevents program assessment and comparison across implemented jurisdictions. With that, I'll shut up now the questions now, and that's my contact information. Thank you for your tolerance and giving me the 5 extra minutes. So,